Hey there, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9 coming to you from Building 42. We're in Mark's office again.
How are you doing, buddy? Seth, good.
How's We're going? Wearing exactly the same clothes.
You caught me doing yoga again.
Yeah, you know, I tried to get in there with him. I fell on my face. Yeah. That's why. That's pretty embarrassing. So we started with microservices last time. We got a really good feeling of how these things sort of live and how they are sort of deployed, how they sort of make sure that these things work, how they're partitioned. There's a lot of stuff that you covered. I was hoping that maybe you could do a quick, like, let's draw the whole thing out. And I wanted to get into, from the developer's perspective, this is all good and well. What does this look like actually when we're building these things on Service Fabric? Awesome. So let's get started. I'm going to do a little review of how these things work.
So the first thing that we've got is we've got a microservices application.
Sure.
A microservices application, here's the whole app, and the app consists of various microservices, A, B, and let's just use C.
Okay.
And each of these has different parameters.
Sure.
Instance count. Package, code package, you know, the code that I'm going to run, some configuration, some placement constraints, we'll get into that later. So other metadata that goes along with that.
Sure.
And then we have the Service Fabric cluster.
Where it actually lives.
Where it lives. And so for high availability, and we'll talk about why this matters, we'll start with 5 virtual machines.
Okay.
And Service Fabric is the cluster manager brain for this. And Service Fabric is a brain that is integrated into the virtual machines that on which the application runs. So it's what we call a ring. And there's a little Service Fabric agent on each one of these. And together, they understand the full state of the virtual machines, whether they're healthy or not, as well as what applications are deployed on them and what versions and what they're doing.
I see. So the brain of the actual Service Fabric isn't some other machine. It's like in aggregate, they're the brain.
Yep.
Okay, so now that you have this defined, so let me step back. How do you even define this?
Yeah. So this is actually a manifest. It's a declarative document that says, here's the app and here's the microservices in it, and it's pointing at these artifacts and has this metadata. The way you'll typically create one, you can hand roll these things, but
we've
got nice Visual Studio integration. So you can go into Visual Studio and say, create a Service Fabric application called Foo. Uh-huh. It has a microservice called A, and here's the metadata for it. It's got another microservice called B, and it'll create mini projects for you so that you can go and start coding for those microservices. And underneath the hood, Visual Studio is connecting the code that you're writing and the packaging with the fact that that's these microservices that is declared in the file that it's spitting out.
And so these microservices, are they Docker containers? Are they special containers? Are they something else?
So today, Service Fabric doesn't support Docker containers. That's something we're working on.
Uh-huh.
So that's coming. Today, they're images that you'll specify as this thing, and then Service Fabric knows how to deploy those things. Service Fabric has some resource governance on Windows that it takes advantage of with job objects.
Awesome. So if I'm opening up Visual Studio, you're saying there's a file new, and then I'll be able to sort of define these things.
Yep.
But it feels like, and correct me if I'm wrong, you don't want to hit a button that says deploy this, right? Because it feels like it needs to be a little smarter than
So Visual Studio, right from Visual Studio, you can go in, say publish, and then point it at a Service Fabric cluster or the own cell single box. Mm-hmm. So one of the really cool things about Service Fabric is that you don't have to go stand up 5 virtual machines and do your testing on it. You can say, create a virtual cluster on my own dev box that has 5 nodes in it, and then go into Visual Studio Publish and say publish to my dev cluster, and it will deploy there.
In a simulator.
In a simulator, yeah.
So you'll be able to
Really running the Service Fabric bits, the brain bits are still there, actually. So it's a really high fidelity experience.
Do you have to have like some beefy, huge box for that?
It helps.
Nice. So now that you've been able to define these and there's a way to test these, like, when it comes to deploying these things, we keep hearing this sort of DevOps kind of approach.
Uh-huh.
Is there a DevOps-y way to do this effectively in Service Fabric?
Yeah, there is. So one of the things with DevOps is that I want to upgrade different pieces of my microservices at different time, and I want to do it safely.
Right.
And I want to do it with zero downtime. So with Service Fabric, often, let me draw another. I'll find my eraser again. It runs away. Let me just draw the cluster again slightly differently, and I'll make it a 6-node cluster just for symmetry.
And these nodes can be containers, VMs, or whatever?
In this case, Service Fabric, these are VMs
that
you give it, or physical servers.
Got it.
You can give it a physical server as well. And what you'll do is say, again, this will say 3, this will say 2, this will say 5, for example, and it'll go put A's, 3 A's, you know, take your B's, place them. And like I said, you get the idea. Mm-hmm. You want to do an update to A. So you'll have A version 1 deployed here. So V1, 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 and I've got 3 of them. And these are behind a load balancer. So client requests are coming in, or requests are coming in from other microservices, and then they get spread to these A's, for example. Mm-hmm. If it's a stateless microservice, I'll talk about that later. Now, I want to do a rolling upgrade because I don't want any downtime. And I also want to have some safety, because if I've got V2 here and it's got a bug in it, I don't want to just like slam all of these A's, have them all go down at the same time, and then have them all fail to come back up, because then A is completely down and my whole app is on the floor. So what I want to do is bring down one at a time, and that means the others are still active and serving traffic, and then do health checks when version 2 comes up to make sure that it's actually good to go. And if it is, then I'll move on to the next instance.
So who is B talking to at that time? It's still talking to the V1s,
yeah,
right?
It's still talking to the V1s.
I see. And once we know V2's good, then we'll redirect, and the brains of Service Fabric will do that.
That's right.
Okay, that's cool.
And so that's called rolling update. And the health model, another capability of Service Fabric, is automated rollback that you can opt in. And there's all sorts of knobs and that you can specify on how many percentage you need to be healthy, and you know, very sophisticated. But the simple model is rolling updates, one slice at a time, and if something goes bad, you can say, Service Fabric, take me back to the previous version. So if version 2, you know, I get to here, and then version 2 starts to show up with a problem, and these things go unhealthy, if you've got automated rollback set, Service Fabric will go, oops, something's wrong. Before upgrading this guy, I'm going to take these guys and put version 1 back and activate them again.
I see. So it might be that during the case of when it's like, okay, V2's good, it's going to start putting V2's out, and all of a sudden, wait, V2's bad, it's going to roll them back.
Yeah. And so that's another benefit of doing this rolling thing, is you give the system time to see if things are healthy or not, not just a spot check right after you run, deploy them. So what I just described means no downtime for this thing.
Yeah.
It's still active version 1, hopefully, you know, catch it in time. And with the built-in lifecycle management of Service Fabric.
So now that you've done that, it's rolling back. It feels like there's going to be, is there ever performance like bumps when these things start to happen? How is that managed? How do these things, like I worry about performance with this kind of stuff, because theoretically it should just be up. When I'm streaming Netflix, I want to see Netflix. When I'm shopping at Amazon, if it goes down, if I'm using, for example, Cortana and she doesn't know what's going on, how are these blips sort of managed? Before we used to have cache, right?
Yeah. Well, so you can apply autoscale to these microservices, so you can have them scale out and scale in depending on the load. One of the ways that we see, and we've built our own services, for the maximum scalability and performance is to bring the state from off-box into the microservice. So if you remember when we talked about microservices last time, we said that A has its own data. So this is data for A, A's data, and this has B data. And the only way B can access A's data is by talking to A.
Right.
It can't just go and mess with A's data.
Well, it shouldn't.
Yeah, there shouldn't. Yeah, there's an interface there. Now, once you've said A is the master of its data, you can choose to have A's data off in some PaaS service or on a VM, like a SQL VM or database as a service. But every time you're modifying that data, a couple things are happening. You're going off the box. And then you're talking to another microservice-based application that looks a lot like this, that is actually doing data replication over on a bunch of other machines. And so the way that we build our most scalable high-performance applications is to use stateful microservices, where the state is actually with the microservice code itself, right on the same virtual machine or server.
Well, what happens when it dies? I mean, where does that data go? Because, I mean, obviously this is important data, and if it's going to be stateful and it goes away, where does the data go? Or how does the data come back? Or if you write, is it actually writing the right thing to all of them?
Yeah, so great questions. Let's take, for managing state, you want the state to be durable. If you stored A's data on this server alone, and this server died, you're done.
Your host.
Yeah, that's it. So you want to replicate your data for high availability. And high availability in a couple ways. One is the durability of the data, and one is accessibility of the data. So if this fails now, I still have two copies.
Right.
What I'll typically do is I'll add another server, or there might be another server, and I'll start to copy and create another copy of A. If A comes back, this server comes back, then I can take advantage of that and then do a delta replication just to bring it up to speed with what the other guys are doing. In the meantime, Service Fabric has this concept for stateful microservices of primaries and secondaries. And when requests come in to this microservice, A, those requests get routed by Service Fabric to the primary. And that is the one that's healthy. And then the primary, when it gets a data change, remove this X, it says, Service Fabric tells the secondaries, you need to update your state to reflect what the primary just got. So if I've got, value equals 1, that comes into this. This sets value equals 1 in its local state, and then it sends V equals 1 to these guys, and they update. And two of the three have to say, I've got it, before we say, OK. And that means that if two of the three die, then this guy never gets the acknowledgement of V equals 1, and it knows that it needs to go redo that.
I see.
It doesn't lose data. So when we have the case of a failure, or we're doing an upgrade of the stateful partition, Service Fabric knows about this, and we'll take the primary and downgrade it to a secondary and make and promote another guy to primary, and then the client's requests
are routed automatically to A.
Yeah, automatically to the primary.
Yeah.
And this guy becomes A prime. And then the rolling update comes through here and this becomes A prime, this becomes secondary, this might go back to primary. In fact, it'll try to bias that. And then this comes back to here. So even for stateful microservices, there's no downtime. You get rolling updates. There's automatic health with rollback if you want them. So if this A prime had failed, it would go back and put A back there.
That's kind of cool. That's like changing the tires while you're driving.
Yeah. And that's what we got to do for continuous availability. You know, I mentioned last time that Azure Database is built on top of this. We don't want customers, you know, to send the notices, hey, Azure Database is going to go down for maintenance while we upgrade it. It's all done seamlessly.
Especially when...
In fact, they roll updates to their Azure Database microservices multiple times a day.
Especially when there's really no such thing as primary working hours anymore, since this thing is all over the world. So this is interesting. I like what I'm seeing, but as a programmer, I'm thinking, man, that's got to be some crazy code.
It's actually, it is crazy code underneath the hood. This is a very hard distributed systems algorithmic problem. So there's a lot of computer science behind the algorithms that make sure, you know, prove that we're not going to lose data and under all the edge cases that can happen. And then there's really hard implementation to make that has to be exactly correct and match that algorithm. All of that is Service Fabric code that we provide. And then what we do is make it possible for developers to take advantage of that. And we've got two programming models that we're releasing initially. One is called Reliable Services and the other one's called Actors.
Okay.
So with Reliable Services, we expose reliable object types, like a reliable dictionary, so a key value store. And your stateful service, if it wants to store things as key values, which is a very common type of NoSQL pattern, you simply, it's projected as a .NET type that looks very similar to the standard dictionary.
Yeah.
So you interact with it in exactly the same way, but underneath the hood, this V1 stuff and replication and synchronization and primary tracking is all happening for you.
And that would be the statefulness of that actual microservices, or that microservice, you're actually using that special dictionary.
Yep.
And inside, anytime you save to that, this is happening without me having to think.
Exactly. I just updated it. The cool thing, too, about it is it supports transactions.
Oh, interesting.
So I've got my dictionary, and I've got two values, V1, V2. And I've got a case where I want to do an update, and V1 has to go to V1 plus 1, and V2 has to become V2 times 2. And these things have to go together. If one happens, the other one doesn't happen, my state's corrupted.
Right.
Right? So a lot of times people use databases for this kind of thing. With Service Fabric, you can put your changes underneath a transaction. And so V1 and V2 updates go together to the secondaries as one operation.
Transaction,
and it either succeeds as a group or fails as a group. So you'll never end up in a state where this happened and this didn't happen.
And that's interesting because I'm thinking of it now from the perspective of a programmer. I just make a microservice, but I use the special data types that are stateful, and that will take care of the statefulness for me.
All this rocket science underneath there is taken care of for
that's
you.
That's pretty magical. Yeah. So you mentioned the first one was the stateful services model,
yep.
And the second one was the actor model.
Yeah, the actor model simplifies things even more, and it works well with certain types of application models, not for everything. So that's why we have two, and we'll probably have more in the future. In the actor model, you can think of it as an object-oriented microservice.
Okay.
So I've got some state back here, so I've got like a variable called A. Let me change it to something else, because I've been using A as a microservice. So it's microservice A, and it's got a variable called foo.
Uh-huh.
Now, with an actor, I declare this object. I declare the interface. So there, I update foo, might be an interface.
Uh-huh.
And once I've declared this actor, now other actors interact with this just by calling update foo and specifying some ID. That ID uniquely identifies an instance of actor A with its own foo. And so simply having somebody invoke that ID, one, creates underneath the hood, Service Fabric will go create this a new object, just poof it up, and hydrate it into memory.
So you're literally just defining actor objects with state and the interface, and then you just start
talking. They just start talking to each other, and then magic happens. Service Fabric is creating things. You don't worry about, you don't ever see secondaries or primaries that you get. But what happens is this foo data is being replicated underneath the hood. You're talking to A. You don't need this actor B, when it talks to A, basically says A, you know, update foo, ID, AID 1. It has no idea where A is, or even if A already exists or not. It just says do it. And Service Fabric will go and say, oh, well, A with ID 1 doesn't exist yet. I'm going to go create it, and then I'm going to replicate its data to two other systems. And A's code is active here on this server. And if this server fails,
A
primary gets moved. And all of that is just underneath the hood. So you're not worrying about the communications protocol. You're just invoking APIs.
That's interesting. See, this seems kind of magical. Has this been used anywhere?
Yeah. In fact, we decided to productize this because Microsoft Research created this project called
Orleans. That's right.
That was used by the Halo team. So Halo Online is built on top of Orleans today.
So literally battle tested. That was a pun for people watching.
Yeah. And so in their application fit very nicely with the actor model. Every gamer is represented as an actor. Every game session is an actor. High scores are actors. These things all just magically poof up and start talking to each other.
On Service Fabric.
Today it's on Orleans. That's, you know, Halo will be moving to Service Fabric at some point.
I see.
But that is this is the productization, effectively, of that programming model on top of the battle-hardened substrate of Service Fabric.
So as a programmer, sometimes I look at this stuff and I get all super excited, but you don't go shooting flies with shotguns, right?
Yeah.
How do you know when I should be considering Service Fabric versus, hey, you know what, you could just stand up a VM and it's going to be just as good?
Yeah. It is really how agile you want to be with the application and how complex the application is.
I see.
So really small applications, an LOB that's just a website with some database, no point in microservicing eyes it. You'll leave it as in a monolith. Even though monolith's become a bad name, it really fits with certain scenarios. Mm-hmm. It's really when you want to create a very scalable, efficient architecture that is agile. And that will be typically your most mission-critical type of applications, the ones that have the highest performance demands on them. And that's where you go in and say, I'm going to create a microservice-based application and take advantage of this kind of power.
It also seems that if your application can't go down, and by can't we mean capital C, that this might be a good...
This is, you really, and that's why we use it all over the place at Microsoft, because it is so rock solid with the distributed algorithms and the implementation underneath it that it is the foundation for all of our services.
So anything I'm missing? I feel pretty good about, sir, we have the services, the staple services model, we have the actor model that works on Service Fabric. Anything that I'm missing?
Yeah, actually, one of the questions that people have is, oh, so Service Fabric is a great thing for Azure, but I want my application to run on my own infrastructure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Or I want to run it on some other cloud for some reason that we can't imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Nice.
So Service Fabric comes, I'm releasing it in two forms. One is Service Fabric as a service, where you go up to Azure portal or through the APIs and say, create a Service Fabric cluster, and then this cluster gets created. And then you can interact with the cluster, and we're managing the cluster. We update Service Fabric on the cluster for you, so you're not worried about this. It's really kind of taking care of a lot of the management work for you of Service Fabric, and you're deploying your applications to the Service Fabric cluster there. But if you want to run it on-prem or in another cloud, we've got another form we're making available called the SDK. Mm-hmm. And you take the SDK and you would install the SDK on the servers that you want to be part of your Service Fabric ring. You specify some metadata that makes them aware of each other, that they're all connected and part of the ring, like, you know, the IP address of this other guy in your cluster is this cluster manifest is called.
It's the artisanal Service Fabric.
It is, yeah.
Okay, nice.
Exactly. And so with that, you can take your Service Fabric apps that run them in Azure, run them on your own on-prem, run them in another cloud, completely portable. So this is really the hybrid story with Service Fabric.
That's interesting. Now, does Azure Stack have anything to do with that too, or is it in Azure Stack?
Well, Azure Stack, of course, supports raw virtual machines.
Sure.
So you can take and do the artisanal approach, as you
yeah,
say it
right.
there. But it'll also have Service Fabric as a service there. So it'll also have the capability that public Azure has of just go create me a Service Fabric cluster. I don't want to worry about cluster manifests and adding and removing virtual machines
right.
and having to update that. That's all happening underneath.
Well, this is super exciting. Back in the days of yore, we would have had to have millions of dollars to be able to even start to think about this, because you'd need the PhD people to do the actual implementation of this thing. Then you need to be able to stand up the machines. You need the IT people to do
yeah.
it. Now you're saying that we can click buttons in Azure
yeah.
and literally make a huge infrastructure.
Exactly. What I just described, the kind of apps that I just described you can make with Service Fabric in the past used to take years. And now, literally in minutes, you can have this very reliable, highly scalable, safe rollouts with rollback, health models, application deployed and running.
Well, this is fantastic. I'm going to make sure to get some URLs for you to put below so you can learn more about this. Anything else you want to add before we close?
I think that's it. I mean, Service Fabric is pretty awesome. And that's why we're so excited about sharing with everybody.
Awesome.
Well, thanks. And one last thing,
oh,
I guess.
Oh, please. Oh, one more. One more thing.
Because the other questions that people have is, oh, this is great for Windows. What about containers? And we're working on Brit taking this to Linux as well as integrating with Docker containers, both on Linux and Windows.
I will say there is a ginormous penguin sticker on his door. Well, again, thanks so much for spending some time with us. I know you're busy. Thanks so much for watching. We've learned about Service Fabric, a really good implementation of microservices that you should take a look at. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We will see you next time. Take care.